Moin moin to Geeksprech, episode 89. As you can hear, it's an English episode again. My name is still Eric, and today I got Aiden with me. Aiden, say hi and tell us who are you and why are you here?
Hey everyone, I'm Aiden Finn, and I am from Ireland, living in the Midlands of Ireland, about half an hour west of Dublin. And I am an IT pro, working in IT since 1996, when I left college. And I work currently as a principal consultant for a Nordic consulting company called Innofactor. And I'm also an Azure MVP. So I've been an MVP for 16 years. Previously, I was 16 years. Yeah. Prior to that, I was a Hyper-V MVP. And for 1 year, I was a System Center Configuration Manager MVP for all my sins.
Not bad, not bad. And I always have to be honest that I became an MVP partly because of you.
Ooh, I'm sorry. Yeah.
It's your fault. Come on. No, really. It was like I was doing a lot of System Center stuff and Hyper-V stuff and Windows Server stuff. And so if you don't know how things work, you start Googling. That's what we all do. And then obviously I came across your blog over and over again. And I thought like, wow, that guy is cool. He's just writing down all the things for me to find. And that kind of motivated me to, well, if nobody would write things down, I couldn't find something. So maybe I should start writing down the things that I experience. And so back in 2012, it's like 12 years ago, yeah, I started my first blog and started blogging. And then I did this very extensively. And then 2015, I got the honor to be in the group of the MVPs too, for 2 years as a System Center Cloud and Data Center Management MVP. Now still Cloud and Data Center Management and Azure. So yeah, there's some history. I knew you before you knew me.
Yeah, the blogging thing is great because, like, I originally started the blog when I was leaving a company and I was going on my own. And I thought, well, I wouldn't mind trying to use a blog to try raise my own profile. Yeah. But the other purpose of it as well was it's my personal notebook.
Yeah,
I've Googled my own blog so many times.
Yeah, I had this also when I was with clients and I was like, I don't know it yet, but I know I've written about it. So let's have a look. Let's go to Eric. Yeah.
And it's crazy how often you're looking for something old. It's yeah, like, oh God, how do you do that in Windows Server? I haven't done any Windows Server in so long.
Well, but it shows that you have known it at some point. So
yeah, it's good to know.
The last time we met was in Prague for yeah, the Experts Live Europe. And we both had pretty interesting, slightly overlapping sessions.
Yep.
And that I was like, funny. Yeah, when I saw your session, I was like, okay, he's talking about Azure Firewall over a third-party firewall. And my session was about native cloud network services over third-party network services. So like I had a bit of the broader lookout, but there was obviously an overlap because firewall is one of the, yeah, the big things that many, many companies are struggling with. Should I go with my standard Palo Alto, whatever I have, or is this Azure Firewall really a thing? And there are things to consider. And that's a little bit the topic that we would like to talk about today. So let's just jump right into it. So what's your point of view? Should I go for Azure Firewall? Is it really a thing or shouldn't we?
It's a real thing. It's a real thing. And it's funny you mentioned Palo Alto. Because I would say in my dealings with customers in the Nordics, 99% of the time, they say they're using Palo Alto and they are planning on bringing Palo Alto into Azure. Mm-hmm. So I would hate to be a Fortinet or a Checkpoint salesperson who's trying to report on their sales in the Nordics because Palo Alto is absolutely hammering them left, right, and center. Now, I can't comment on the quality of Palo Alto or Checkpoint or any of those guys. I can only evaluate them from what I see they offer towards Azure from an architecture point of view. But Azure Firewall, absolutely a real thing. It is not some, oh, here's a Windows Firewall and we're chucking it in the cloud. It is not, do you remember Internet Security Accelerator or ISA server?
Oh, yeah.
It is not that. It is a genuine real firewall built by real firewall developers who probably came from Palo Alto, Checkpoint, whatever. If you look at where the developers of Azure Firewall are located, they are based in Silicon Valley. Wow, where's Palo Alto? Oh, it's in Silicon Valley. The actual location of Palo Alto, not the company. They're in Israel. If you ever think of security software development, where's one of the hotspots in the world? It's Israel. And of course, they have people in Redmond outside Seattle as well. So it's a genuine product. When you talk to these people, they are serious firewall developers, and I get the privilege of doing that. I know some of these people face-to-face and would talk to them one-to-one. And they are engaged with large enterprises. They're engaged with some of the, you know, the industry consulting companies who advise the likes of Microsoft and Palo Alto and Checkpoint what enterprises are looking for. So they're quite involved, and I think they've had an advantage in that they've come to firewalling as an organization later than everybody else. So they were developing a firewall for Azure, and they had the opportunity to start with a blank sheet of paper. They did not have to bring something from the past.
And they didn't have all this legacy that everybody else has to support. Yeah.
Absolutely. They literally just had a clean sheet and said, right, what do customers need and what do customers want? And how do we make it easy? And those were the big things. But it's a real firewall. And we can come to all that other stuff later. But when I did that presentation in Experts Live Europe, for me, I was focusing on the firewall, and it wasn't just, okay, it's Azure Firewall versus the others. It was also to teach the attendees about Azure Firewall, the features, the functionality as well. So I was trying to do two things at once. And it was great that you and me kind of came to the same conclusion, because I went to your session in the afternoon. I was like, God, I know Eric's really good. Is he going to come to a completely different conclusion to me?
Never use Azure Native tools. It was wrong.
So, and it was really funny when you came along and you had some of the exact same screenshots as me from like the Checkpoint documentation.
Yeah,
this is crazy. How could anyone recommend this? But, you know, the first point for me when doing the comparison was, okay, it's cloud native. So I'm going to use the term ARM, because that's everything in Azure is ARM. Whether you use Bicep, Terraform, whatever, it doesn't matter. You PowerShell, you use the GUI, it's ARM. It's an ARM resource. It's native to Azure. Versus when you get a Palo Alto or whatever, it's a virtual machine that has a third-party interface and doesn't have some of the other things. And that's the important thing, is the other things. So to begin with, infrastructure as code. Those of us who are working with mid to large customers, or if you're in a managed service scenario and you need to create the same product over and over again and you need change control, you should be doing infrastructure as code. So whether it's ARM, Bicep, Terraform, Pulumi, whatever it is, you should be doing infrastructure as code. And Azure Firewall, being a native resource of Azure, can be completely deployed using infrastructure as code. So I've done it in ARM, I've done it in Bicep, I've done it in Terraform, and it's completely configurable. It's not just the deployment. It's configuring the settings and doing the daily operations like configuring firewall rules. That can all be done as code. And that is a big, big advantage. And the Azure Firewall, because they had this, you know, we can start from zero, they very early on were thinking about concepts like DevSecOps. And I know I had some early conversations with them 5 years ago about how I saw this thing going. And I was lucky enough that I was able to help shape, you know, a teeny, teeny, teeny little bit some of the stuff that they were thinking about when they were developing Azure Firewall policy. And they came up with this concept of rules collection groups. So rules collection groups are a sub-resource of Azure Firewall policy. So if you don't know, Azure Firewall policy configures the Azure Firewall. Azure Firewall is just some compute. It's highly available compute behind the load balancer. And it implements whatever settings are applied against it. Azure Firewall policy is where you configure your settings and your firewall rules. Really, the rules are actually a sub-resource type called the rules collection group. And the cool thing about that rules collection group is it can be deployed separately from the firewall policy. It's associated with the firewall policy, but it can be deployed separately. So you have the option. It's not a mandatory thing, because some people would hate this concept, but you have the option of saying, you know what, I'm going to take that rules collection group and put it in a different repo in my GitHub or DevOps. So if I do have a DevSecOps organization where we have delegated the ability to write firewall rules and NSG rules and all that stuff out to our developers and operators, they can do that. So they can start writing their own firewall rules. Doesn't mean they're able to implement them, because it should be going through process. It should be going through a change review, which we call a pull request in the DevOps world. And that's when your security administrators and your firewall administrators can actually look at what those people have developed. And of course, the larger organizations are going to have cloud centers of excellence or CCOEs, where they're teaching people how to do this stuff and coaching them on how to do this stuff. So, you know, I've done this as a consultant. My most recent project, I was working with a SaaS company, all developers, database administrators and developers. It was only towards the end they actually hired IT pros, and the developers were writing their own firewall rules and then putting that stuff up for review. And, you know, they were nervous about it at first, but you know what? They started getting good at it because they knew what they needed. And that potential to be able to do that. Now, you look at the third-party solutions, they can't do that. And I know some of them will push it and say, oh, we have X or we have Y or whatever.
We have a Terraform provider somewhere.
Yeah, I heard that one from Palo Alto. There's a provider out there somewhere that does infrastructure as code. When I started digging into it, it did a little teeny tiny bit. Yeah. And support for that was questionable. But the reality is, Azure Native with the Azure Firewall, and yeah, it'd be the same with other resource types in Azure, beats the third-party solution so easily in that scenario. It's just, there's no competition in any way, shape, or form. You can script or whatever it is, whatever you want, with your checkpoints or your Palo Altos, but nothing comes close to being able to do complete infrastructure as code. And that means, you know, it doesn't require a principal consultant or a senior consultant to actually go and deploy this thing. even in the portal, it doesn't, to be quite honest. We'll talk about skills later. You can have your code already written and basically say, right, there's only a few parameters you need to do to get this the base deployment out there. You just need to select the SKU and select, you know, how many IP addresses or what region you want to deploy it in, and just go for it. You don't need to be a genius. Whereas getting your Palo Alto up and running.
Yeah, but that's interestingly one of the most discussions that you have is that the old Palo Alto admin will tell you, oh, I need my consistent management. I've managed my old Palo Alto that way, and I don't want to change the way of managing firewall rules because we do Azure. And I think that's a lot about learning and change management and getting people along the way. And
well, that brings you to my next point, which is, why do we go to the cloud in the first place?
Because it's cheaper. That's what everybody wants it to
well,
be.
Well, anyone who's done cloud knows that's not true. Yeah, not without. Well, it depends. If you're lucky enough and you're in a position where you can completely redevelop everything, potentially it can be cheaper. Maybe. Potentially. But the reason we go to the cloud is we want to change things. We have come to the conclusion that doing IT the old way doesn't work for the business. As most IT pros and developers don't even think, well, actually, that's not true for developers, because developers are, their client is the business. But IT pros, we're worried about the blinking lights, the ones and zeros, the pretty pictures. We're not thinking about who the actual customer is, and the customer is the business. And very often we just view them with contempt. You know, the business coming here and hitting here and wrecking our servers and our storage with their stupid demands. But the business is the one that should be driving the push to the cloud and saying, right, we want change. We want a digital transformation. And that's not just some buzzword from Satya Nadella where you can go drink a shot of whiskey or whatever. It's a real thing. It should be a real thing where you're reevaluating everything you do as a business with regards to IT. I was very careful about those words. I didn't say everything you do in IT. but as a business with regard to IT. And everything should be up for grabs and saying, right, we need to change our people, our process, and our tools. And I don't mean, oh, we're throwing out all these people. I mean, we should be looking at their skill sets and putting them in different positions to take advantage of those skill sets with new processes that optimize how we deliver IT and with the more appropriate tooling. And that's where we get into saying, right, we're looking at doing things like DevOps or DevSecOps or DevSecFinOps, or there's so many different phrases you can come up with. But coming up with new ways of doing things. So saying, oh, I'm going to do Palo Alto in the cloud because I've always done Palo Alto. Not that I want to pick on Palo Alto, but it's just who I always encounter. That makes no sense. Absolutely no sense. And the other part of that is, well, our process is every time we need to get something done and there's some sort of network communication, we have to go to Gerhard, or we have to go to Jürgen, or we have to go to Anna. And they are the bottleneck on getting everything done. Yep. Now, there's two other things to think about for Jürgen or Gerhard or Anna there, because they're about to get an awful shock if they bring that Palo Alto to Azure. Because there's somewhere between 20 and 1,000 workloads are going to be going to Azure soon. And guess what they're all going to need? Lots and lots of firewall rules. Because if you're deploying your Azure networking correctly, if you're listening to anybody who knows anything about network security these days, you're going to be implementing micro-segmentation. Which means that firewall is going to be sitting between every single workload. And it will block everything by default. So this old concept of secure zones, it's what they're called in Norway, where you have a private or an internal network, and then the so-called WAN network or public network.
Yeah, the good inside and the bad outside.
Yeah. Yeah, that's dead. Concept of a DMZ, dead. Because in a micro-segmented network, everything's a DMZ, is the best way of thinking it. You do not allow traffic between A and B if you do not need it. And that's how you stop advanced persistent threats, or at least you limit the damage they can actually do, because we always should assume that they get in. So you want to limit the damage that can be created by something. So you implement that a firewall with a deny all rule by default, and that's what the Azure firewall does. And you only open up the holes that are required to make your workloads function. That means a lot of firewall rules are going to be required. And poor Gerhard, Jürgen, or Anna is going to be sitting there as the bottleneck in the entire organization as all these migration teams come along and say, right, we're bringing this in and that in and this in and that in, and we need all these firewall rules.
Oh, and what I requested yesterday has changed. Please change it again.
Yeah. And because it's a Palo Alto and only Jürgen, Anna, or Gerhard, or whoever it is the only person who knows how to do the Palo Alto, you're screwed.
And by the way, I've seen that in one of my big clients. In the main migration time frame, we had up to 4 weeks of delay for a firewall rule to be implemented.
Yeah.
And it's like you have devs there that want to bring up features, and then they have to wait 4 weeks for a firewall rule because they're just so much in backlog. That's like, yeah, that's slowing you down as an entire company.
Yeah.
That's not what you want.
That's not agile.
No.
And let's face it, we as IT pros are not getting younger. And many of us are approaching retirement age or worse. So
not me, but yeah.
So that means we need to have more people working on firewall. And we need to make it easier for them, because how long does it take to become proficient at Palo Alto or Cisco, God help you, or Checkpoint? Or Fortinet. It's not something where you can say, hey, go have a look at the Palo Alto docs for 2 days and come back and start doing stuff. Yeah. Or go watch that video on LinkedIn or whatever it is. And yeah, now you're ready to start deploying rules. Or sit through a 3-day training course at the local training center and you're ready. That's not going to happen. Because these things are big and complex. Guess what about Azure Firewall? Azure Firewall is just part of Azure networking. It's not some specialist skill. If you go and do the AZ 700 training course, you're expected to know Azure Firewall. Same way you're supposed to know network security groups and root tables and public IP addresses and all that stuff. It's just part of the thing. Do you need to spend an absolute fortune on buying an appliance to deploy Azure Firewall and learn it in the Azure portal? No, you can fire a free subscription and start playing around with the basic SKU. If you're clever with deallocating and allocating your firewall, you could even fire up the premium and, you know, save your credit so you don't go bankrupt. And you can learn that thing. I reckon I can teach anyone the fundamentals they need to know about the Azure Firewall in less than a day. And some of the advanced stuff you're not going to learn in that day. But the fundamentals you need to know about how to run and operate an Azure Firewall, how to do troubleshoot an Azure Firewall, I reckon you can do it in less than a day. Mm-hmm. If someone who knows what they're doing shows you how to do it or teaches you. And I do that. In fact, I probably do it less, an awful lot less, actually. Because most of the time I'm dealing with people who've been in IT and they understand the concepts of firewall rules. It's just they've never managed a firewall. You know, they've managed Linux firewall rules or Windows firewall rules or whatever. So they know the fundamentals. So it's very easy to teach them Azure Firewall. All the documentation is not behind a paywall. It's on learn.microsoft.com.
Yeah, it's just available.
There's a million blog posts out there. So this thing is easy to pick up and learn. It's accessible. And that's a big thing. There are more, I suspect, I have no figures to prove this, but I suspect today, at this moment, there are more people learning Azure Firewall than there are learning all the other third-party vendors put together.
Yeah, pretty likely. So one of the things, and that's a pro and a con at the same time, because that's one of the big arguments you have, is like, but my Firewall X, let's just don't call out anyone there, has those features.
Can do
Firewall plus this, plus this, plus this, plus this.
Yeah.
And the Azure Firewall is just an Azure Firewall. And it just can do Firewall. And from my perspective, that's a pro because it's a firewall. And it's supposed to be just a firewall and not a web app publishing instrument and intrusion detection system and I don't know what else. It's a firewall, and if you want to have a web application firewall, we have that too. And if you want to have, I don't know, a CDN, then we have this too.
Yeah.
But it's not all in one box. On the other side, that's one of the arguments that people were bringing up is like, my Checkpoint has it all in once. It's all in this one machine, and that's awesome.
It doesn't in Azure. I bet you it doesn't in Azure.
Yeah.
Because they have to save the compute space. So that gets us into performance. So when you're running a third-party appliance, under the covers, whether it's PaaS like the Azure Firewall or it's a third-party NVA like one of the companies out there, it's more than likely a DV2 virtual machine under the covers. So the standard Azure Firewall is a DV2. Your typical deployment of a third-party NVA starts at a DV2. And you have a maximum throughput on that thing. So there's only, and why is there a maximum throughput? Well, there's a limit on how many interrupts the physical underlying cores can handle at one time. So the more physical cores, not virtual processors, but physical cores you have, the more interrupts your NICs can handle, which means the more packets can be processed. So there's a limit on how much can actually be pushed through there. And they have to conserve the CPU for the basic functionality of throughput and filtering and scanning. So they can't do all the other functionality. Azure Firewall are quite happy to accept that. Why? Because there are specialist resources for doing things like web application firewall. But we have an actual web application firewall, which is based on the application gateway. And possibly the wrong place to actually put that functionality in an Azure architecture is in the hub where your firewall is going to be sitting. There are better places to put it. And potentially, my typical design, it actually, with two places where we could put the WAF, we can put it with the workload, or we can put it in a central location. It's actually another spoke, but it routes through the firewall to get to the backend pool where the web servers or the application servers are. Otherwise, we need to delegate that thing out completely. We put it out with the workload itself in a spoke. But there are specialist resources for that. So it's use the right thing in the right place. The Azure Firewall, do we want basic firewall? Yeah, we've got the basic firewall, but we've got other stuff in there as well. So there's stuff that it's able to take advantage, which is really cool. So for example, we can turn the Azure Firewall into the DNS server for our virtual networks. Really cool, handy feature. So all our virtual networks then use the Azure Firewall as the DNS server. But what it does is basically forwards to your actual DNS servers, whether that's the Azure DNS private resolver, your domain controllers running as Azure VMs, DNS servers running as VMs, Azure DNS, you pick it. And then when you've done that with a proxy feature enabled, you're now able to start doing FQDNs in your network rules, which means if you've got an app service that wants to communicate with smtp.microsoft.com on TCP 587, you don't need to know all the IP addresses of smtp.microsoft.com. Your app service is going to request the firewall to resolve that name. The firewall is going to proxy that off somewhere else, get the result back, store it in memory. So when the app service makes a request to communicate with smtp.microsoft.com, the firewall remembers that and goes, right, I've got a rule to allow that communication. And that's really cool. That's a major time saver. You'd be amazed how many times I've had a colleague come to me and say, hey, we've got a customer with Checkpoint and I need to know all the IP addresses of SMT.microsoft.
Been there, done that.
It's like, oh yeah, you could do that, or you could save a lot of time in the long term. Just go Azure Firewall and save some money potentially too. So there's that, and then we can bump the SKU up. So if we want to bump up to the premium SKU, we can do the web category filtering, and with deep inspection on the USNs, we can do TLS inspection. Really, that feature on any firewall in Azure is a chocolate kettle. It'll work great with VMs, but as soon as you go into your platform services, you can't do TLS inspection. It's just not going to work on any firewall. And then you've got IDPS. So we do have IDPS in the premium SKU as well. So if you want that deep inspection, constantly updated database where it's looking for patterns of attacks, it will find that, and you can either do alerting, or you can alert and automatically block the traffic as well. And that brings you to the next big thing, which is the integration through the rest of Azure. Because it's an Azure resource, where is it sending its data? Well, we can send the data to multiple places, but the best place from an Azure point of view is Log Analytics Workspace. So we can take the logs from the Azure Firewall, send them to the workspace. We've got a central place where we've got our NSG logs, we've got our firewall logs, we've got, you know, VNet Flow logs, which is in preview. We've all this information network-wise in there. If you've got Azure AD Premium, you could be sending your logs from there into the Log Analytics Workspace. So I can do all my troubleshooting with KCL queries. The Azure Firewall actually has a new format for tables, so resource-specific tables. So you're not just using the generic bucket of Azure Diagnostics. Yep. And they even have a sample query in there where you basically say, just show me all the stuff where it's any of the possible reasons for blocking the traffic. Is it threat intelligence? Is it IDPS? Is it a network rule? Is it a application rule? And it basically just looks, and you can just customize and say, right, where my source IP is this, where my destination IP is this, where my port is, whatever. And you very quickly can just span all the possible reasons to see why something was allowed or why something was blocked or what happened with that packet or whatever. So that's really cool. But then you can say, right, what do I do with that? How can I extend that? What's the deeper integration? Well, a lot of organizations are choosing to use Microsoft Sentinel as their SIEM solution now. So how do we turn that thing on? Well, turning that thing on is real easy. You go into Sentinel and you associate it with a workspace
that we already have discussed, huh?
And we have the data. All the data is there. And yeah, it's just, oh, how do I do Azure Monitor? Well, you just create your metrics alerts or your monitor alerts or your schedule query alerts out of Log Analytics Workspace. The data's there. Oh, I'd like to create a dashboard. Oh, no problem. I can create an Azure Portal dashboard using the data of my Log Analytics Workspace, or I can create a workbook in Azure Monitor using the data out of my Log Analytics Workspace.
Pull the data into Power BI, and you create a fancy Power BI dashboard if you want
Yeah, and you can give
us are there.
Yeah, and you can give your manager that lovely screen on a TV in the office that nobody ever looks at. But
still, a lot of customers have those things. Huh?
Yeah, some of us would just create one of those in PowerPoint or Paint or something and stick it up there. You change the image every once in a while so the managers think it's real. Not that I would have ever done that or considered it. But yeah, that deep integration into the rest of the system is, it's baked in. Do you get that with the third parties? No, you don't get it. It's their own thing. So now you have to have multiple panes of glass to manage your network. And Azure is about simplifying. You know, it's about reducing that vendor complexity and that support complexity. You know, when I have an issue, let's say I have Cisco firewalls, and I have them running in Azure, and there's a problem with traffic getting from A to B, who do I call? Well, do I call Microsoft? Do I call Cisco? Do I call Ghostbusters? Straight away. And it's you, the customer, that actually has to figure out who's right and who's wrong, and then convince the others that they're wrong. And you are responsible for that. Whereas if it's an issue in Azure Firewall, you call up Azure Support and, okay, maybe you're lucky and you have a good support agent. But you've one point of contact. There's one vendor. And that's it. So it simplifies things so much more.
Totally agree. So this whole integration story is my main piece. And as soon as customers are starting to ask about, hey, my third-party firewall, how does it look like with high availability and operating this thing? Who's managing the operating system and things like that? Then it gets really funny where I say, like, okay, hey, with an Azure firewall, do you know?
Yeah.
Configure it.
High availability, so that brings you into the architecture. So it's fun when you look at the third-party firewalls because they're bringing their software from on-prem. An on-prem, when we think about it, what is an on-prem network? It's a bunch of cables. What's a network in Azure from our point of view? So physically, yeah, it's all a bunch of cables and switches and stuff like that. But from our point of view, it's software defined. And that's the change in the laws of physics that really baffles a lot of network administrators. Server people get this much quicker. And that's been my experience in running Azure training for years, is you get a network admin in and start explaining this stuff, and you can just see their brains, you know, not working anymore. Whereas the server people just go, yeah, I get that. And you actually see the server people start to explain Azure networking to the networking people. It's kind of fun. But the big difference is to get from A to B in the physical network on-prem, a packet has to go through hops. There's a default gateway that actually exists and responds to pings. And it goes through the different hops, and eventually a wire will lead it to a port in a firewall. Then there'll be another port in a firewall that comes out somewhere else. And there's a rule in the firewall that says, yes, you can route from there to there. And if you're this particular source and destination, a port, you're allowed. And it'll go through wires and go through other hops and eventually get to the destination in Azure. In your virtual networks, no matter how many hubs and spokes you've got, how does a packet get from A to B? It's quite simple. The packet hits the NIC in A, magically disappears, and reappears at the NIC of B. No matter how complex your Visio is, that's actually how it works by default. And it's up to us to use the three mechanisms of routing in Azure to get the packets to go through a firewall. Doesn't matter what brand of firewall it actually is. So there's a big fundamental difference. The third parties are taking their software from on-prem, so that physical appliance that expects to have lots of ports and lots of networks around it. So an internal network, an external network, a management network, a VPN network, a DMZ network, and all that stuff. They take that software, bring it to Azure, and that software expects to have all those networks there as well. So if you look at the Palo Alto reference diagram, and I don't mean this in a bad way, but they do get Azure networking better than some of the other In fact, I would say better than probably all the other firewall vendors, because you can, when you look at the diagram, you can see the logic of it. And to be quite honest, when I was learning Azure routing, I found the Palo Alto reference diagram quite educational.
Okay.
I actually did. But now when I look back at it and it's like, geez, when I compare that to Azure Firewall, why do they have all these networks? They actually offer nothing from a security perspective. Absolutely nothing. To say I've got an internal network and an external network in Azure, it makes no difference.
But that brings me to a question, a quick question. That, because that's a thing that I've been asked so many times, and I'm wondering if it's just the German customers. Why can't I add two different VNets to the same VM? Because that's what they would like to do. They would have to have the external VNet and the internal VNet and add it to the VM that is their firewall appliance. Because as you just explained, that's what they did in the past. I had this cable coming from the good side and this cable coming from the bad side. And now there's this stupid guy, Eric, that tells them, if you want that, it would be subnets in the same VNet. That doesn't add anything. So,
yeah.
Do you also see those questions about having... No?
Okay. No, thankfully.
lucky you.
The only place I've ever seen that actually is in our SAP reference architecture about 6-7 years ago. Where they were dual homing each of the VMs, and there was a management subnet and then a operations subnet or whatever. But no, I never see that one. And it makes no sense in Azure.
No.
Absolutely no sense when you're dealing with a software-defined network. The Azure Firewall, it's very simple. You have a subnet called Azure Firewall Subnet, and the firewall is joined to that. And you don't need all this other stuff. And then there's the checkpoint reference architecture. Wow.
And the fun thing is that they have this website that explains Azure Firewall versus Checkpoint, and where they say Azure Firewall is too complex. and then you open this reference implementation and you're like, wow, there are a gazillion icons in one single architecture diagram with I think 4 or 5 instances of their appliances. And it's like, yeah. Once again, please say that Azure Firewall is complex.
I would say the entirety of Azure Firewall's documentation, which is actually pretty good, is probably smaller than the PDF that includes that diagram.
Right. Yeah, that's right.
It's a ridiculous diagram. Azure Firewall, from an architecture point of view, is so simple. I've got a firewall. I've got a firewall policy that manages the Azure Firewall. It's got to put one or more public IP addresses. My recommendation is usually to use a public IP prefix to deploy those IP addresses. But that's a whole other thing. And it's got a private IP address that's automatically generated for you. Under the covers, it is automatically load balanced and automatically scales. Under the covers.
Yeah.
It's part of the platform. You don't need to deploy any service buses. You don't need to configure any app service registrations to, you know, edit root tables to do failover, unlike certain brands I can think of. So,
any functions that take care of automating things? It's just there and working.
Yeah, when you make a change to the firewall from your Azure Firewall policy, it writes through to the firewall to some highly available backend storage, which each of the compute instances reload their configuration from automatically. And that's it. It's literally, there's nothing else to the architecture. You have the potential to make it more complicated if you want to do forced tunneling. So if you want to say, right, I want this scenario, and to be honest, I think it's a US military scenario where I don't want the firewall ever to route to internet. I want it to always route to on-prem. And you can basically say, right, I'm going to strip away the public IP address from the Azure Firewall, and I'm going to introduce a second subnet called the Azure Firewall Management Subnet. And the control plane stuff where the Azure Firewall needs to talk to Azure will go through that. And then all traffic to internet will actually go over to some appliance, whether it's another Azure appliance or it's to on-prem. And that's a weird scenario. But realistically, the Azure Firewall is just so simple. It's a firewall with a public IP address and a firewall policy that drops into a single subnet called Azure Firewall Subnet. And that's it. From an architecture point of view, they got it right.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And yeah, like you said at the beginning, because they started from scratch and they had to take over a lot of old bullshit.
Yeah, and you know what? To be fair, some of the networking companies, so I've been working with Cisco Meraki on a project I'm on at the moment. And I used Meraki a year and a half ago. And it was deploy out VMs, and it, you know, they did have this, if you want to go HA, you're going to have to need managed identities and all this other crap. And edit root table, let this thing edit root tables for you and stuff. I was like, oh boy. And then I was deploying Meraki this week, and Cisco have a whole new managed application deployment. And literally the deployment wizard was, right, what do you want to call this thing and what do you want to connect it to? And I was like, okay, that's sweet. And they just it went into a single subnet. Whereas the old solution was, oh yeah, you're going to need, you know, three or four subnets. It's like, they were starting from zero. And I know that the Meraki guys were working very closely with Virtual WAN about 3 years before the pandemic. So 3-4 years ago, they started working with them. And they obviously started with a blank sheet of paper and said, right, this is the fundamentals of what we need. Oh, and how does Azure networking really work? So to be fair, you know, some of those third parties have started to modernize.
They're getting better. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. but I still, now the Meraki stuff, as it turns out, it's pretty sweet from a deployment point of view. Getting an SD-WAN connected was a breeze, and get a BGP integration going was a breeze. But from the firewall point of view, Azure Firewall still absolutely knocks it out of the park. There's just, for me, there's no competition. And as a consultant, it's real simple. And that's actually what drove us to use Azure Firewall in the first place. It's like, you're going to all these customers and they all have their own preferences. Does that mean I need to know Checkpoint and Palo Alto and all the different Cisco options and WatchGuard and Fortinet? I'm an Azure person. What can I learn? Well, I can learn Azure Firewall, so I can go into the customer and say, you know what? You're about to go, I'm building your infrastructure with the vision of me and my colleagues, or my colleagues are going to be deploying out your new resources and building your landing zones for your migrations and stuff like that. Who do you want to do that work? Do you want to do that work? Or do you want us to do that work? Because if you're going Palo Alto, it's going to be you.
You and always you.
If you want me, the consultant, to do it, I can bring the set of skills I have, and I can do it well, versus doing this hodgepodge of different things that I can never learn. As a consulting practice, you know, realistically, you're never going to, unless you're IBM, you're not going to have the ability to scale at the numbers of bodies to have all these different skill sets. You can learn one thing, and if you learn Cisco, you're going to go into a Palo Alto house and they're just not going to accept it. But if you go in with the cloud native solution, it's going to be more acceptable. It will be it's our incumbent versus the platform version. And, you know, going in with the platform version, it's easier than saying, oh, I work with something you don't like that you already chose not to use.
Yeah, I totally agree. Aidan, that brings us to the famous last question of this podcast.
Who?
It's always the same question to everybody who's ever been here. The question is, in the topic that we discussed today, if you would have a magic wish, what would it be?
A magic wish. Oh,
I like this moment
in Azure Firewall. Oh, there's one I can't talk about, because I have inside information.
Yeah, then better don't.
In fact, MVPs don't even know this one. So it's like double NDA. The one thing I would, and it's not affected me yet, but I've seen some of our colleagues in the MVP community ask for this repeatedly, and I think it's a legitimate ask. So we have a scenario where when we run highly available firewall. And I'm very deliberately not saying Azure Firewall, because this affects any firewall when we go highly available, because it's always going to be behind a load balancer. So the public IP address will be behind the load balancer. And when we have poorly written legacy workloads making lots of outbound connections, they're consuming a SNAT port from the load balancer. And once, it was actually my very first hub deployment when I worked for Innofactor, and the customer did have a really bad application. And every time it made an outbound communication, instead of using an existing channel, it basically opened up a new port. So it consumed a new SNAT port and very, very quickly consumed all the SNAT ports on the load balancer. This affects all the different firewalls as soon as you make them highly available. So Azure Firewall, you go out through the firewall, you go out through the public IP address, you consume your SNAT ports, and eventually you have no SNAT ports left, which means you can't make outbound connections anymore. So the solution on all of the firewalls, or anything that's making these outbound connections through a load balancer, is to add more public IP addresses. You see the same thing in the NAT gateway as well, if you're using that for outbound communications, is add more IP addresses. And that's why I said use a public IP prefix, because then it's a consecutive set of IP addresses. So it's .1, .2, .3, .4. So your external party, very simply, you can say to them, hey, you should allow my CIDR for my IP prefix, not just a specific IP address. And you might be saying to Aiden, why? Can you not pin a communication out to one IP address? And the answer is no. That outbound communication could go out through any one of the public IP addresses assigned to your firewall. So the most I've seen in a firewall is two IP addresses. And the last I checked, I think it's either 256 or 500 potential public IP addresses you can have on an Azure firewall. It's a crazy number anyway. Yeah. the most I've had is two. And that was the very first customer. Since then, it's actually only been one. And we've never needed it. But we do architect for the potential. So one of the things a lot of the MVPs have been asking for is the ability to pin outbound communications to a single IP address. That'd be the one thing I would ask for. And related to that, I know there's a lot of people who are using Azure Virtual WAN as a means to do SD-WAN and just to kind of push the hub into the platform a little bit. I've stepped back from it because I found it a bit too limiting. And one of the limiting factors is you can't actually bring your own IP addresses or your own IP prefix to Azure Firewall in Virtual WAN scenario. So you end up with random IP addresses for your public IPs. Which then complicates things and then even forces you to ask Microsoft even more, hey, can I pin my outbound connections? So that would be the one big ask I would have.
Okay.
Yeah, there's another thing I would ask for, which I know they're considering, or they were considering at least this time last year, but I can't talk about that.
Okay. Then you will tell us as soon as it's live or in preview or something.
Yeah.
And we're allowed to talk about it.
Well, it's not my idea. Definitely not my idea. But as soon as they mentioned it, I was like, oh, that makes so much sense.
Okay. Yeah. We will stay tuned. That sounds interesting. Awesome. Aiden, thank you very, very much for your time. Thanks for being here. Thank you for the insights. And I think that's a very valid topic, because still there are a lot of customers either have moved to the cloud years ago and did an old design because it was that way, or that are thinking about doing things right now and are at this point to think about, hey, should I go left or right? So is an actual topic and will stay an actual topic. So thank you for your time. Thanks everybody out there for listening in. Stay tuned, stay healthy, and hear you next time. Thank you. Bye-bye.